From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. On this edition, our focus is North Carolina House District 20, which covers the northern portion of New Hanover County. Holly Grange, a Republican, was first appointed to the seat after Rick Catlin announced he was stepping down. She then ran unopposed in the general election and won. This year, she faces a challenge from Democrat Leslie Cohen, who beat out two other candidates from her party for the nomination. We'll meet the candidates in alphabetical order today. Leslie Cohen and her husband ran a commercial graphics firm for 12 years before transitioning their business to fine art in 2002. Leslie is a painter herself and says her work is in collections around the world. She and her husband moved to the Cape Fear region about 5 years ago, but it wasn't until the state legislature passed HB 2, yes, that's the one frequently called the bathroom bill, that Leslie Cohen was moved to become much more politically active. And she joins us now. Leslie Cohen, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much.
Today's interviews are pre-recorded, which means we are not able to take listener questions. Leslie Cohen, since you identify HB2 as the galvanizing issue that led you to greater political involvement, tell us why this law has personally affected you. Why this issue?
I am the mother of two transgender adults. So this law directly attacked my children's rights. And, you know, most people don't know that they know a transgender person. There are a lot of trans folks out there, and a lot of them are living in secret. Either they are presenting as the gender they were assigned at birth to the public and secretly living their true identity, or they are passing as cisgender in the workplace and in public, and people simply don't know that they have transgender friends or even family. And so I am very fortunate that my children were comfortable enough to let me know. And when I found out about this bill, when this happened, I was just devastated because transgender people are so marginalized and it is so difficult for them to live their lives. And so many of them take their own lives because they are not able to live as the person they truly are. And I just understood how damaging this really was. And, you know, I'm a mother. When someone does something that hurts your children, you have no choice. You have to stand up and act.
Now, this law has since been modified to take away the public restroom requirement, but it still, of course, keeps in place the inability of local governments to enact their own anti-discrimination ordinances.
And by doing that, people don't really realize how much that hurts transgender people, especially children, because our schools are unable to enact policies. So every family with a transgender child is forced to reinvent the wheel at a school-by-school level and try to get accommodations for their child so that their child isn't bullied, so their child doesn't end up not using the restroom all day. We have children who are getting urinary tract infections, who are wetting themselves at school because they're afraid to go to the bathroom. And this is just unconscionable.
What would you say to people who argue you're talking about such a tiny percentage of the population and you're introducing people who are biologically a different gender into a place that was, say, a protected place for another gender? You've heard this argument.
I have heard this argument.
There are a lot of people who believe that.
And, you know, gender is much more complicated than most people think. And there are more transgender people out there than we know. Right now, just between in the time from when my children came out till now, the estimate of how many are out there has doubled. But just on the estimate right now, there are more transgender people out there than there are Jews. So if you think about how many people you know who are Jewish, and then take that across the board, this affects a lot of people. And the other thing is, it doesn't really matter how many people it affects. We're talking about very, very vulnerable people. And, you know, this is a very, very important issue to me. And as much as I love talking about it, it really isn't the crux of my campaign. It's what got me involved. It's what got me reading up on what's going on. It's what got me listening to other people around the district and, you know, my neighbors, my friends, and made me realize that our legislature is making decisions based on political games and
what do you mean by that? Give me a specific example of political gamesmanship.
If we look at what happened with the classroom size bill, the idea that we want smaller classrooms is a great idea. Everyone wants more teachers, fewer students. That's not controversial, but it is expensive and you have to pay for it. And when they went and put that in, I don't believe that it was an oversight that wasn't paid for. And they had so many chances to correct this, and they kept going and kept going. But that was a great political bargaining chip. So when that bill finally came through to address the problems that were created by the class size mandate, they were able to negotiate with the governor and give him something. He could not sign that bill because it had the fix for the classroom sizes, and that had to be done, and they took it down to the wire. So they're using things like our classrooms, our children's education, to pass things that are not necessarily a good idea. And this is happening over and over again. That's what HB 2 was. It was playing political games. And so much of what we see happening, the things that we see happening with Gen X and the types of legislation that have been proposed by the Republican supermajority don't actually address the problem.
Well, that's a good example of an issue that is still facing the majority of constituents, particularly in House District 20. We're talking with Leslie Cohen, by the way, Democratic nominee for that district. She is challenging Republican incumbent Holly Grange this November. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. We saw a great deal of bipartisanship, across the board bipartisanship, in response to Hurricane Florence,
yes,
the legislative response. We didn't see that with the issue of Gen X and other unregulated chemical compounds in the drinking water supply. But both sides are accusing the other of political gamesmanship there. What would you do if you were able to set things up the way you wanted to set them up? We're seeing now utilities are creating their own answers in the form of Brunswick County building a reverse osmosis plant. But what does the state legislature need to do?
Well, first of all, we need to properly fund the DEQ, and we need to buy the mass spectrometer that they asked for. My biggest concern right now is that we drank Gen X for 30 years without knowing it. What else is in our water right now that we don't know about?
And you can't pin that on the Republican majority, because this is something, you know, the Democrats had a majority in state office in Raleigh for a very long time.
But when we found out that Gen X was in the water supply, we found out from independent research. Since the Republicans have taken over and have the supermajority, they have repeatedly cut spending to DEQ. DEQ is underfunded and understaffed, and that was done by the Republicans. Now,
but clearly, even 30 years ago, what was then DENR was not doing its job.
It was, well, part of that is technology and not knowing then what we know now. We now know that we have these chemicals in our water. We know that we have dozens of chemicals related to Gen X in our water right now. We don't know which ones in most cases, and we don't know how much in any case besides Gen X. The DEQ asked for a piece of equipment that would allow them to test and answer all of those questions. Those are the questions that we need answered. We know that we have these bad chemicals in our water. We know there is a way to test for them. We have the money in the budget to pay for that equipment. But Kim Moore's lobbyist said, you know, if you buy this piece of equipment and tell people what's in the water, they will be upset, and that will be bad for our business. And that was the decision that was made, was to buy the lesser piece of equipment that will not answer these questions, that will not tell us what is in our drinking water now that may be making us sick, and not allow us to test for how much of these compounds that we already know are there are in the water. They are actively keeping us in the dark about what we are drinking, and that is completely unconscionable.
The political climate that we're now in, we know it's more polarized than ever, and
Absolutely.
We know this trend towards self-sorting is not abating. That dynamic just continues. Do you think that we lose anything by continuing this self-sorting and spending time only with people who think the way we think?
That is definitely a problem. And that's a sociological problem that I'm not sure we can really fix.
Well, I asked this question because it is part of our political machine right now. There's less negotiation. There's very little compromise.
It is.
This is more about getting majorities. And you talk about the Republican Party. You're throwing some pretty serious allegations out there that state Republicans don't really care about the health and safety of the citizens.
Now, I want to challenge that statement right there, because I'm not going to say that they don't care, because on a personal level, I think that each of them does care. I think if you ask any of these people, that they can honestly and wholeheartedly say they don't want to make people sick. But I think there is a disconnect between what they are doing in Raleigh and the fact that those things have a direct connection to people's lives. And I think they have been able to separate those two things in their own minds, and that's what's happened in our public discourse. So there are these political games going on in Raleigh, and there's no
So you're saying it's not intentional, it's cognitive dissonance
in a way. I think
it's
cognitive dissonance. I don't think that these are evil people. I think that we need to step back and say, you know, all of these people in Raleigh are human beings, and I think that they, you know, they love children and puppies and all of the things, you know, all of the things we all love. But somehow you get into that legislative building and all of that gets pushed aside and it's just about the politics. And I do think that there is a solution to that politically. I think a lot of that is caused by the way our maps are drawn. Because right now we're in a situation where those legislators are picking their voters instead of the voters picking their representatives. And as long as we're doing that, we are not going to get honest, forthright discussions in the political arena about how to solve problems.
So what's the answer to gerrymandered districts? That's something the Democrats and the Republicans have engaged in whenever, you know, whichever party was in power.
We have.
So how do you get a Republican majority who has no incentive at this point to move to some sort of nonpartisan process? How do you get that process underway?
That is always the challenge, because when the Democrats were in control, my party did it too. And whichever party is in control is always going to want to keep control of those maps. But I believe we're about to be at a very, very special moment in North Carolina history. Right now, we are going to see a shift in this election. And it remains to be seen how big that shift is going to be. And things are very, very volatile all the way up to Washington right now. There is a lot going on, and none of us really has any idea where we're going to be in 2020. And so I think we're in a position right now after this election that both sides are going to be at a point where neither is really comfortable that they're going to be in control after the next census and the new maps are drawn. And in that position, we can really start talking about, okay, guys, enough is enough. Let's put this into the hands of a nonpartisan or a bipartisan committee that's outside the legislature. And I would really like to do that in the form of a constitutional amendment. Because if we don't, in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years down the line, we're going to find ourselves back in this situation. But if we can fix those maps, we can have a functional government again in Raleigh. And we can have really fair elections in North Carolina for the first time in history. And to me, that's a really exciting thing to be a part of.
We have some constitutional amendments on the ballot this November. One of them would reduce the maximum allowable tax rate to 7%. Do you support that amendment? Why or why not?
I do not.
Why not?
And that is not to say that I want higher taxes, but we do not know what is in our future. And if we are in a situation where we need those funds, why on earth would the legislature want to tie its own hands so that it does not have that option as a body sometime later? We don't know. We're doing something that is going to affect people forever until this Constitution is changed again. 100 years from now, this may need to be done for our great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Well, folks who are concerned about the Democratic approach to fiscal responsibility might argue raising taxes is how the Democrats would plug budget holes before, but Republican lawmakers have a $600 million surplus this year, which is far beyond what they even projected. So what would you say to voters who look at that kind of fiscal management and think, I couldn't vote for a Democrat, that's impressive?
We're not talking about an amendment that would lower taxes. Taxes are already well below that 6%. This bill in the short term does nothing. But imagine
the constitutional amendment.
Constitutional amendment. It does nothing. So, you know, I don't have any plans for a big tax hike. We have this surplus. The question is, how do we spend that to better the future of North Carolina? What do we do with those dollars? Do we go and continue cutting taxes to our most wealthy citizens and to corporations, or do we invest in our schools? Do we invest in our infrastructure? Do we set up rainy day funds so that when the next big hurricane hits? These are the kind of decisions that we need to make. It's not, raising taxes is not on the table right now.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Democratic nominee Leslie Cohen, who is running for North Carolina's House District 20 in New Hanover County. She's challenging Republican incumbent Holly Grange. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. Since Hurricane Florence dumped waste from hog lagoons and coal ash into North Carolina's waterways, there are new questions about the way hog waste is managed in the state. But hog production is also a critical component of North Carolina's agricultural economy. Is there anything to be done there, or do we just need to recognize that these natural disasters are few and far between?
Of course there is stuff to be done. There are best practices available to these farmers to better contain the hog waste. We need to sit down. You know, I'm not an expert in farming. I don't know how all of these things are done, but I know they're doing it better in other places. And we need to sit down and do some hard work and figure out how this needs to be done, how we can do it without bankrupting our farmers, of course. They're very important to us, and we need the food. And we need to look at how we can do both, because I believe we can. We can protect our waterways, and we can protect our farmers. And some of that may be moving more to plant-based farming than animal-based. Some of it may mean trying to move some of these farms away from the waterways. Some of it may be just better practices in how to contain the hog waste. But we have to look at a combination of solutions and protect our water and protect our economy.
The United Nations recently released a climate change report that sounds the alarm, emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions by 45% by 2030 in order to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius. Does North Carolina have any role in contributing to the effort to limit emissions?
We all have a role. And in North Carolina, we have a couple of really amazing resources just because of where we are geographically. We get lots and lots of sun and lots of wind. And we need to look at ways to harness both of these. And right now, we have a legislature that has actively gotten in the way of our progress there. We were second in the United States in growth of solar energy. and we are falling back further behind. We were second behind California. I'll take that any day. I was in Germany about 10 years ago. There are solar panels on every house in Germany. They are practically in the Arctic. When I was there, it was only, there was only about 7 hours of sun, of daylight at all a day.
How do you say the state legislature hampered the efforts to increase solar?
We have... I've got to be careful here because I don't have it right in front of me. But part of it is the federal taxes on that. But I think it was more the wind, actually, that the legislature is now hampering our work on. So we need to look at counteracting what's going on at the federal level for solar. I'm not sure, honestly, what's been done on the solar without having it in front of me, so I don't want to misspeak.
Fair enough. Another constitutional amendment would change the process for filling judicial vacancies. And the amendment actually says constitutional amendment to change the process for filling judicial vacancies from a process in which the governor has sole appointment power. Is that an amendment that you would support?
I do not.
Why not?
You know, it's funny that this legislature wants to take everything away from the governor. But then the one thing they wanted to give the governor was the power to shut down Chemours, and I find that really confusing. When we vote for legislature, we are voting under these gerrymandered maps. And we're never going to have perfect maps no matter what we do. So the legislature is never going to perfectly match what the people of North Carolina want, right? We're going to be a little bit off. You can't gerrymander the governor. We all vote for the governor. We all had a voice in that hire.
This was a really close election, though, that didn't get settled for weeks after the election. So you could say that half of North Carolina didn't vote for this governor.
You can say that. But less than half of North Carolina voted for these legislators when you add those votes together. So you have somebody who was a 50-50, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. This and judicial appointments has been an executive responsibility.
And that's
always
why some would argue, supporters of this amendment would say, governors just have too few restraints on their ability to pick judges. And sometimes they put political cronies on the bench. So isn't this about checks and balances?
Well, you know, if you were looking at somebody who was going to be on the bench for a lifetime, but this is just to fill until the next election. So if this is really a poor choice, you have a choice. This person is going to be up for election again very soon. It's just another power grab. It's not really something. And once again, all these amendments, the devil is in the details. And I encourage everybody, whatever side of the aisle you're on, go and read these amendments. Read the entire amendment. And remember that we are changing the state constitution, and that is pretty much for good. It is very hard to change it back. So if there is anything that you don't understand, if there is anything that you're not sure about, the safe vote is no. And so, you know, this is a very wonky technical thing. But when you look at it, all of these amendments just about say, oh, and we're going to fill in the blanks on this amendment after you voted on it. So we have to be very, very careful because we're voting on things that we don't have all the information on yet.
Where do you see the greatest opportunities for economic growth in the state?
I think in technology. I think we could be the Silicon Valley of the East Coast. And that's an exciting thing. We have such a great university system. And if we just think about what we're doing, set up the infrastructure, the high-speed internet, and really look for bringing these companies here, I think we could do really great things. I have a daughter who's a software engineer in the San Francisco area. And when I see how much she makes, it blows me away. And then I see what she's paying in rent, and I say, oh, So that's just kind of a living wage out there. And I mean, she was sharing a house with four other people, and they were paying $8,500 a month in rent. There is so much opportunity here if we just give these companies what they need to settle here. And we have beautiful areas to live.
Are you talking about corporate incentives?
Not necessarily incentives, but just setting up the infrastructure. If we have good schools, if we have the technology infrastructure, we already have these great universities. If we set up the technical university programs, the engineering programs, these companies will come.
And that's our time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Leslie Cohen, thanks so much for sharing
your
views.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up after this break, we'll meet the incumbent, Republican Representative Holly Grange. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You are listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. North Carolina House District 20 covers most of New Hanover County, largely in the northern portion. Holly Grange, a Republican, won appointment to the seat after Rick Catlin announced in 2016 he was stepping down. She then ran unopposed in the general election and won. This year, as she seeks her second term, she faces Democratic challenger Leslie Cohen. Holly Grange serves as deputy conference leader for the House Republican Caucus and is co-chair of the House Select Committee on North Carolina River Quality. She's also the director of community relations at Osprey Global Solutions, a Wilmington-based company that offers remote medical logistics, security training, and business intelligence services. She is a 15-year U.S. Army veteran. Representative Holly Grange, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. You recently approved legislation that is hailed by Republicans as a groundbreaking path forward in terms of dealing with emerging contaminants in the water supply. Opponents say this legislation is crafted to satisfy industrial lobbyists. There is an argument the governor already had the power, one element of this legislation, to shut down Chemours through the Department of Environmental Quality. Opponents of this new legislation also assert that if it came to a court battle, because the newest law is more specific, it could wind up protecting other polluters if a judge has to decide between which law is more applicable. Is it possible that you're protecting other polluters through this legislation?
No, it's not. And I do want to clarify something that you said first, that it's not just Republicans who have hailed this legislation. We have scientists in the UNC system that have also hailed this legislation and actually said that it is an example that should be applied throughout the country, that it is groundbreaking. So, no, I do not think that a court will choose between this law and any other law, especially if both of those, pieces of legislation, both laws, give the governor that power, whether he has it inherently with his constitutional power or whether there's a law that says that he can shut them down.
What is it about this legislation that you're most proud of? What makes you think it's groundbreaking?
Well, you know what I like about it is it produces a database that can be checked by the average person on their computer. They could find out what is exactly in the water at every intake in the state. And keeping in mind that Chemours is not the only company that discharges into our waters. It provides a baseline for each water intake so that DEQ, it makes their job easier. They will know exactly what is in that water, and they can balance that against any of the permits. The legislation also gives DEQ the ability to eliminate their 40% backlog in the permitting process, and also automate that so that they don't have to use the paper permits. Everything will be automated. Everything will be transparent, not only to DEQ, not only to the companies, but to the North Carolina citizens.
As you point out, Gen X, which is what spawned this entire cascade of events and mm-hmm. you know,
Gen
scrambling.
X that's been in the water for 40 years.
Right. We know it's now only a tiny percentage of the actual chemical load in the water because of this issue of emerging contaminants, things that aren't regulated at the federal level. There's been talk among Democrats of repealing the Hardison Amendment, which, of course, would allow the state to make its own standards that might be more stringent than EPA standards for the drinking water supply. Why not do that?
The Hardison Amendment does not apply. The state has the ability to make more stringent standards if it is in the interest of public safety. And this would be an event in which public safety would be taken into account. So the Hardison Amendment would not even apply.
Another point of contention around this path forward is funding the NC Policy Collaboratory instead of DEQ and DHHS. The collaboratory, as we know, is headed by Jeff Warren, a former advisor to Senate Leader Phil Berger. DEQ is the regulatory agency. Why wouldn't you just fund the regulatory agency instead of adding another body to the process?
Well, DEQ's responsibility is to enforce the law. The policy collaboratory is determining what is in the water. DEQ does not need to do that. The policy collaboratory, they are the scientists that do this every day. They have the equipment to do it. DEQ needs to focus on enforcing the law, the permits, the law, and not, they don't need to worry. The baseline is going to be done by the policy collaboratory, and then DEQ can balance with their equipment. They can do targeted analysis for specific compounds that are in the water to enforce the law.
Is there a law that would allow them to enforce PFAS in the water supply at this point?
Well, PFAS is a family of chemicals,
right.
and of course, I know that at the EPA level, they're doing a lot of work on that because this has become an issue across the country. So if it is allowed to be discharged in the water, and they have a permit to discharge it, then they can enforce the levels that are required.
So at this point, we're talking about the allowable levels that would be on the DEQ permit.
Yes, and it's a health goal is what we call it in our state. But there are different standards for different chemicals that are in our water. Granted, you know, we want nothing in our water, but if there is an allowable standard, we want to make sure that it's beneath that.
In this campaign, the focus in the television ads and also print ads has largely been about the drinking water supply. And you have been portrayed by your opponents as someone who just colluded with industrial lobbyists to make them happy. WRAL first reported that Preston Howard, who is president of the North Carolina Manufacturers Alliance, wrote to state legislators that broader testing of the water supply beyond just this family of chemicals will almost assuredly reveal there are many, many chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and other consumer products in those water supplies. He warned legislators not to open a Pandora's box, and your opponents basically say, you complied. And
I have never even spoken with Preston Howard. I've never received any mail from Preston Howard. I have never talked with anybody from his organization. And in fact, the North Carolina Policy Collaboratory is doing just what he did not want us to do. They are finding out what is in the water. I think it's laughable that anyone would think that me living in Wilmington with my family, with my pets, as a property owner, would want to have poison water.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Republican Representative Holly Grange of New Hanover County, who is seeking her second term in North Carolina's House District 20. She faces Democratic challenger Leslie Cohen. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. Let's talk about the political climate for a moment. We most often talk about the public dialogue and the tone of that dialogue in relation to what's happening on Capitol Hill. It seems to have gotten more vitriolic than ever, not less. And I think this is probably something we spoke about 2 years ago in the run-up to the 2016 general election. Do you see any way that you can move the ball down the field in terms of lessening that vitriol and making the public conversation more constructive?
Well, what I tell people when they bring up this topic is, you know, as a member of the State House of Representatives, 95% of what we vote on in the State House is nearly unanimous. There are probably 5% of issues that are very hot button, emotional issues. Emotion is brought into it. And those are the issues that we hear about in the media because that's what sells media. I work very well with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and I will continue to do so as long as I'm afforded this privilege of serving. As long as we have extremes, there's going to be a divide in the middle.
Since Hurricane Florence dumped coal ash waste from hog lagoons into North Carolina waterways, is there any dialogue at this point about changing the way hog waste is managed in this state, considering it's such an important part?
There is always discussion about that. And in fact, the hog industry is the most regulated agricultural industry in the country. And as you know, agriculture is our number one business in North Carolina. It's our number one economic driver. There are 3,300 hog lagoons in North Carolina. You would think from the media that they all breached during Hurricane Florence. In fact, only three did, and none of those were near a waterway. The majority of waste that was in the water after Hurricane Florence had to do with sewer systems that overflowed. We do need to talk about hog waste because it is an issue, but in this situation, you know, there was not an overabundance of hog waste in the waterways after Hurricane Florence. There was a lot of human waste in the waterways after Hurricane Florence. Maybe we need to also discuss why we have all of those sewage treatment plants so close to the waterways.
Fair enough. There are other states that have changed the way they regulate waste management with hog farms. Is that something that you think is worth considering?
Well, I think it is worth considering because we always want to take into account best practices. I've been told, I support hog farmers. Well, I support small business, and a lot of those farmers are small businesses, and that's what I support.
There are six proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot this November. They've faced public criticism, of course. They've faced some court battles. All five former living North Carolina governors, three Democrats, two Republicans, have spoken out against the two amendments that would transition judicial vacancy and state elections board appointment power to the legislature. In fact, former Republican Governor Pat McCrory asked General Assembly leaders to not, quote, hijack the state constitution. Do you support those amendments? And if so, why?
Well, I do support the amendments. I support the other four more than I do those particular two. However, I do think that it is not taking away any power from the governor to give him or her a list of vetted candidates for judicial vacancies for them to choose from. That will eliminate, I think it would allow the governor to make an educated decision, and it also will eliminate any possible cronyism.
And then in terms of the constitutional amendment to establish an 8-member bipartisan board of ethics and elections enforcement, supporters, of course, say the governor has too much power over the electoral process. Given this situation, opponents of that say this is another power grab, another attempt to take power away from the governor. What about checks and balances in the state government?
Well, as you probably know, the governorship in North Carolina is constitutionally very weak to begin with. And so it's not necessarily a power grab. I don't understand why anyone would be against an actual bipartisan ethics and elections board. 50-50, as you know, currently, you know, whatever the governor's party is, they get a majority on those boards. And of course, if the situation was reversed and it was a Republican governor, I don't think we would be hearing all of this discussion about having a bipartisan board.
Because you see this as partisan opposition.
Yes, I do see it as partisan opposition.
You said, though, you support the other four amendments more than you do those two.
Yes, you know, I think the other four, I think, are more palatable.
The first one, I think it's the first one on the ballot that would enshrine hunting and fishing as a constitutional right in the state. Some people snicker a little bit at that one. Some say, are you kidding? There's no chance that right is going to go away. Why are you messing with the state constitution?
I don't know that there's no chance that that right could go away. I just don't.
Under
this political climate, with respect to gun control, and with respect to a lot of emotional issues that have that revolve around guns, I could see that if the political climate was a certain way, that right could be infringed upon. Yes, I do.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Republican Representative Holly Grange of New Hanover County, who is seeking her second term in North Carolina's House District 20. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. And let's just talk for a moment about the constitutional amendment to cap the state income tax rate at 7%. It would reduce it from 10%, the highest possible income tax rate. And opponents of this say this doesn't lower current taxes. It's misleading to the general public, to folks who actually aren't doing research on this before they vote. But it does hamstring the legislature in the event there's an emergency in the future.
There was a lot of discussion about this in committee and on both the Senate and the House floor. The original proposal was actually to reduce it to 5%, which I think potentially could hamstring a legislature. When I moved to North Carolina in 2009, the highest income tax rate was 7.75%. Since then, it has continuously come down. Our revenues have increased. That is what produced our rainy day fund that we have been able to use for Hurricane Florence, and we'll start rebuilding that rainy day fund as we continue to have those increased revenues. It has been below 7% for some years. I don't think that I think 7% is reasonable to have as a tax cap.
Beach nourishment, shoreline stabilization, that's an important part of the coastal economy, and of course that's part of your district. Is there anything new on the agenda as you contemplate a second term that would help folks near the coast in terms of funding some of these issues?
Well, it is a very important issue to me because of where I live, because I utilize the beaches, and it's very important for our economy down here in southeastern North Carolina. And even from Hurricane Florence, we have determined that those beaches that had been renourished fared better through the hurricane than beaches that had not been renourished. I do think that the state has a role to play in this. You know, of course, there's federal funding, and then there's the local occupancy taxes that part of that goes towards it. But I do think the state needs to have a buy-in in the beach renourishment issue. And when you think that there are people in 99 of the 100 counties in North Carolina own property on our coast, and probably all of them visit our coast at one point or another. So it's a statewide issue. It's not a mountains versus beach, and the state has to have buy-in.
When you do contemplate a second term, what's top of the agenda for you? What's so important about this, and why do you want to continue?
Well, I want to continue what I've started. I'm very fortunate to serve on many transportation committees. And, of course, transportation is a big issue around here, especially with our growth. I'm on the education committees, K-12, on education appropriations. And there have been a lot of initiatives that have been put in place, and I'd like to see those to fruition. I don't serve on this particular committee, but there is a committee that is looking at how we fund our funding formulas for education. Because every facet of our educational system, whether it be K-12, whether it be community colleges or colleges, they all have different funding formulas, and they're very complex. So hopefully streamlining it and making it more simple will help our educational system, because we want to make sure that the money's going where it needs to be.
Do you think that there should be more funding for pre-K?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that those early learning years, that's what sets the stage for education later in life. As a matter of fact, even before pre-K, there should be programs in place that help parents realize what they need to do with their young infants and small children to get those brain pathways formed. And that is what will determine whether or not they're a success in school.
Do you think that teacher pay, I mean, certainly it's moved up over the last several years, but there's still a solid argument that says North Carolina still isn't the best place for really excellent teachers to stay and work. It's hard to attract and retain them. What does the state legislature still need to do there?
I think we still need to look at teacher pay. It is a work in progress. It is certainly not a mission complete at this particular time. And the way the raises have been accomplished, that the raises so far have been targeted raises for certain segments of the teaching population that suffer the greatest attrition.
You mentioned being a member of the Transportation Committee. Are there priorities that you're going to be looking at that would specifically impact the Cape Fear region in the next couple
of
years?
Well, there is a strategic transportation plan, and that prioritizes the transportation projects. We have projects on that list in New Hanover County. The primary one that comes to mind is Military Cutoff in Eastwood, College Road, and Oleander, two of the worst intersections in the state, perennially ranked very high on that list, as well as the Hampstead Bypass, getting that going. And that's we're seeing work on that in the extension of Military Cutoff. So not only just roadways, but I'm looking at, you know, we look at rail, we look at different issues with regards to our ports.
And your colleague, Representative Ted Davis, opposes offshore exploration for oil and gas. Your colleague, Representative Frank Eiler, supports offshore exploration for oil and gas. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I don't think we need to be drilling out in the ocean, but I think, as you know, I have a military background, and national security is very important to me. I think it is naive for us to think that we shouldn't know what is there. So exploration, I don't have a problem with. Drilling, I don't think it's necessary at this point. We're the number one energy producer in the world right now.
And so what if seismic testing went on to discover a much larger resource than anyone imagined existed? What then?
I think it's important that we know what is there. I don't think it's necessary that we would have to drill. And what if it's natural gas? Natural gas isn't going to cause the environmental damage that oil would, crude oil.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Representative Holly Grange, thanks so much for taking the time to share your views.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks also to Leslie Cohen. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. Remember, early voting ends Saturday. Election day is November 6th. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.